Welcome to the global edition of the Ned Group Investments quarterly highlights, where we profile some of the interesting takeouts from our recent fund manager workshop with our global best of breed managers. To hear the full fund manager presentations or for more information about our funds, visit the Ned Group Investments website or access more of our content via LinkedIn, YouTube, and podcast channels. The third quarter of 2024 saw a continuation of strong performance across global asset classes. The bond market was buoyed by easing inflation and an interest rate cut by the Federal Reserve. We will hear insights from a global bond manager on the recent bond rally and outlook for this asset class. Global property and emerging market managers discuss recent developments and their respective opportunities and challenges. Finally, we address concerns over Japan and China, and our global equity managers cover recent additions and strategic holdings. David Roberts, co-portfolio manager of the Ned Group Investments Global Strategic Bond Fund, explains the key factors driving the global bond rally and provides insights into expected interest rate cuts and their potential impact on the market.
So I guess the question is, why the rally? And what's likely to happen in the next few months. And if we move on to the next slide, we'll see that the data that we saw across the G7 was the main reason for that significant bond rally. I would say in particular, employment, especially in the United States, rose quite significantly. So what we saw was a number of people becoming quite concerned about the possibility of a US recession. At the same time, though, from our perspective, more so than the employment situation, we also saw a significant fall in inflation. Indeed, across the G7, the expectation was that we would see aggressive interest rate cuts from central banks because inflation was falling not just to target, but in danger of falling below their targets. And if we look at that in terms of the next slide, so what that combination meant was that across the G7, with the exception of Japan, investors were expecting significant falls in interest rates. And indeed, as the quarter closed, more than 8 interest rate cuts were expected from the Federal Reserve. The important thing about that is it would, if it came to pass, take core interest rates in America below 3%. Now, that's quite a significant level. It's the type of level that we generally normally only see in terms of recession. So we had to be very careful, certainly from our perspective, in positioning investors' portfolios for a market that was already expecting significant reductions in interest rates.
We explore the global property sector's strong rebound over the past year with Marco Colantonio as he discusses reasons behind the performance of the asset class.
So after a couple of years of lackluster returns, the global listed property sector has rebounded quite solidly over the last quarter. And in fact, over the last 12 months, with global listed REITs delivering almost 29% total return, which is just a little bit behind global equities at 32%. And the most recent quarter, in fact, the global listed property market outperformed global equities with a 16% total return. And as you can see on the right-hand side of this slide, some of the segments of the real estate market that performed the strongest were self-storage and healthcare. And from a regional perspective, Hong Kong and Canada were both strong performers as well. Some of the conditions behind this performance is obviously from a starting point, REIT operating conditions are quite solid. We've seen moderating supply with solid occupancy leading to good rent growth conditions, and also values of real estate are at or below replacement costs, which is an important theme that I'll talk about a little bit more throughout this presentation. And importantly, we have begun to see an easing of financial conditions, which is normally supportive of commercial real estate markets. And that was highlighted by the first cut by the US Federal Reserve this cycle with a 50 basis point start. Of course, we did have a bit of volatility within Asia. On the positive side, we had rate cuts and fiscal stimulus within China, boosting the Hong Kong market. While in Japan, the unwind of the yen carry trade and some geopolitical uncertainty did create some negative influences.
Brian Coffey, Portfolio Manager of the Ned Group Investments Global Emerging Markets Fund, provides an insightful outlook on emerging markets as an asset class. He discusses key drivers of performance and the opportunities and challenges ahead.
So what are the outlook for the asset class? So, you know, one of the key drivers in terms of our sentiment towards emerging markets in general is the US dollar. And we thought, and our chart on the left-hand side shows where we think that may have happened, we thought that we may have already seen a peak in the US dollar from October 22. Should that continue, then we would expect to see a significant rebound in the EM asset class relative to developed markets. So you can see in the right-hand chart just the degree of underperformance, which even though we think that we've started to see the reversal in the dollar, hasn't shown up in the relative performance of EM versus DM. And that was largely driven by Chinese underperformance. So to summarize all that in a portfolio summary of strategy, we expect global economic weakness to extend into 2025, at least till the end of Q1. Inflation globally is going to fall and is back on track. So we think that rate cuts will accelerate across numerous markets and economies. We think the Chinese stimulus package is credible. Its size remains unclear and is likely to be made slowly more visible to markets. And we think that scenario is more associated with a stabilization of the economy and not a reflation of the economy. That, however, given the relative prices of Chinese equities, should be enough to announce some further performance from that market. The Indian economy is slowing, and the hitherto successful policy of anything but China for some markets, including India, is starting to lose its shine. We think that the best standalone markets in terms of the beneficiaries of the rate cut environment that we anticipate globally are the ASEAN markets. So we are overweight Indonesia, Thailand, Philippines, Malaysia. We have a preference for those liquidity sensitive markets versus cyclical markets, given that we don't think this Chinese policy is going to be reflationary and we see a cyclical downturn in other global economies. We think that the currency overvaluation is still a concern for Latin American markets. And we think that the US dollar, although it's holding below its October peak and it hasn't moved down sharply from there, we think that still supports a secular decline view, which would be very positive for the overall asset class.
Daniel McDonough, Portfolio Manager of the Ned Group Investments Global Cautious Fund, discusses the recent volatility in the Japanese market and provides insights into the complexities of the current investment landscape in Japan.
So we've seen that the markets posted healthy absolute return numbers for the quarter, but that doesn't tell the whole story. And the first caveat to recognize is that we saw a pronounced jump in volatility in the VIX. That's commonly referred to as the fear index in August, which reached levels only seen a handful of times in the past 20 years. And that suggests that not all is entirely rosy in the investment garden. And the immediate cause of this volatility spike was Japan, which in early August suffered its largest one-day fall in several decades, when the Nikkei was down over 12% over the course of a couple of trading days. And there are several reasons driving that. Part of it was a response to the increase in interest rates announced by the Bank of Japan, and that had repercussions on the classic yen carry trade, where you borrow in a currency with low interest rates and buy higher interest rate investments in another currency. And another contributor was the fear that the recent yen strength would damage the ability of Japanese exporters to maintain their desired growth trajectory as they become less competitive in international markets due to the currency. And the fact that Japanese equity markets have performed well in recent times might also have encouraged some profit-taking here to occur. So several factors were at play there. And despite the fact the market recovered its losses quite quickly, the volatility does imply that any bull story on Japan is not without its complications.
Daniel also shares the outlook for the Chinese economy and the broader challenges affecting investor confidence.
So if we turn to China, can global markets rely on Chinese growth to provide a good foundation for optimism going forward? Well, we saw a big rally in the equity market in China at the end of the quarter on news that the government stimulus package would be unleashed. Measures in that included a reduction in the reserve rate requirements for local banks, an effort to try and lend to state-owned enterprises to buy unsold property in an effort to clear that inventory that's been overhanging the market, and the establishment of a fund for brokers and insurance companies to try and help support the stock market. But the scale of that stimulus is only necessary because all is not well there either. We've seen that Chinese consumers are still feeling the negative after effects of a classic property bubble deflating following a residential construction boom, and that's really weighed quite heavily on consumer sentiment. And we can see on this chart here that the decline in the number of housing starts that China has experienced since the peak of the property market has been marked. And what the graph also shows is a comparison to the post-housing bubble experience that the US and Spain had back in 2006, which suggests that Chinese housing starts may still have further to fall from here. And the toll this has taken on property prices is easy to observe on this graph. Again, based on the experience of the US back in the mid-2000s, there might be more to come for China too. And that's why the government has decided to step in. But whether that will be enough to turn the tide on consumer sentiment or not is uncertain. Chinese malaise goes deeper than simply the property market correction. Deflationary pressures are more widespread in the economy than the authorities would like, and they're not just confined to the property sector. There's also varying degrees of nervousness inspired by the deglobalization trends that we've seen and the tendency of entrepreneurs and business leaders to spontaneously fall foul of the authorities. So our sense that there is no quick fix that can solve all of these issues at once. And finally, there was the potential for escalating tensions in the Middle East, which caused the oil price to reawaken at the end of the quarter. And that's just further evidence that there are a variety of issues out there that may put a strain on investor confidence going forward. So in conclusion, we'd say that headline figures on asset class returns suggest that all is well with the world, but double-digit returns on equities and bonds over the past year may not be reproduced going forward. If you scratch just beneath the surface, there are enough things going on in the background to make investors at least pause and question for how much longer this bull market can go on for. And we remain defensively positioned as a response to those challenges, which we note are combined with elevated valuation levels, and they are likely to prove unforgiving if any disappointments do emerge.
Mike Moore, Portfolio Manager of the Ned Group Investments Global Equity Fund, discusses recent strategic investments in the software sector. He provides insights into the performance and potential of Dassault Systèmes, a French design software company.
The first thing I say in terms of the new purchases, though, two of those are both software companies, so Dassault Systèmes and Salesforce. Going through Dassault Systèmes firstly, and then I'll actually go into more detail on Salesforce in another slide, but Dassault Systèmes is a French design software company that sells its products into areas such as kind of the automotive industry, into the aerospace industry, and broader industrials. And it helps with designing products, so things like prototypes of products, simulating how those products work. So think aerodynamics of cars, that sort of thing. And so this software is very entrenched within the people who use it, and so the design teams. And so there's a lot of benefits that they can gain from that and a lot of efficiencies that they can get. But at the moment, it's got two issues that are against it. The first one is it's moving to a subscription model, which can muddy the near-term financials, but will lead to longer-term value capture, which we've seen with other software companies. And secondly, because of its end market exposures, there has been some near-term pressure. So, for example, the automotive industry is obviously facing some near-term pressures. And those two aspects have conspired to actually put Dassault at a sort of near low in terms of its 10-year valuation. And so that is the sort of company where we see long-term duration, a real opportunity to actually deploy capital for a long period of time. And so we actually took that position recently.
Brian Salmo, the co-portfolio manager of the Ned Group Investments Global Flexible Fund, provides an in-depth overview of key holdings in the fund. He discusses the performance and prospects of Meta, Jefferies, Comcast, and JD Peet's, highlighting both their recent challenges and potential for future growth.
I'm going to highlight four investments that have proven meaningful to the fund's trailing 12-month return. Meta has performed particularly well over the past 2 years, aided by strong cost discipline, reacceleration of the company's revenue on the back of greater monetization of the Reels product, and developing excitement around the company's Llama model. Having a direct relationship with billions of users, Meta appears well-positioned to benefit from the coming AI computing age. Jefferies shares have appreciated on the basis of strong operating performance, wise capital allocation from the company's owner-operator CEO, and market excitement that the investment banking and capital markets businesses will benefit from a robust period of corporate activity, which is expected to be facilitated by lower interest rates and clarity on the U.S. election. Comcast faces challenges and challenged operating conditions that have led to the share price weakness. These include competitors overbuilding parts of their network and fixed wireless offering greater scale competition than initially expected. Given its relatively strong balance sheet and stable capital return policies, shares have declined somewhat modestly over the past year. Currently trading at approximately 10 times free cash flow and committed to an increasing dividend and share repurchase program, these shares appear to be good value. JD Peet's has suffered a 30% multiple re-rating in the past year. Earnings have been largely stable, but a change in management, a record high coffee bean prices, and headwinds from the company's Russia business have led investors to view the glass as half empty. We are hopeful that new management will prove up to the task of making entrepreneurial and cost-efficient investments to reinvigorate growth and put JD Peet's in a place to benefit from its position as the number two world coffee maker.
Thank you for listening to the Ned Group Investments quarterly briefing. You can access more information about all the fund manager workshops at the Ned Group Investments website, YouTube, or through our podcast channels on all major platforms. Please join us for our next edition at the end of January 2025.